Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Right now, we're very excited to have our next guest on the show to talk about his new book, The 100-Yard Journey, A Life in Coaching and Battling for the Win. We have Gary Pinkel on the show. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. And so let's just start with catching up with what your life is like now that you're not the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. For all the Mizzou fans out there, what's life like for Gary Pinkel now?
Well, that's great. I mean, it was a bit of an adjustment for me because I had no plan to do this. So my cancer's in remission right now. I go back every 6 months and get and it's probably gonna, I'll get treatments again someday. But feel very blessed that right now it's in remission. I've done a lot of book things that are going on. We'll be in Kansas City probably, and we'll get the dates out to everybody out there. We'll be for some signings in Kansas City the end of this month and in November, actually in December too, so for our book, The 100-Yard Journey. So I'm doing that. I got some speaking engagements that I do periodically, business and, leadership and teamwork and things like that. And most importantly, I get to do anything I want to do. So each and every day. And I'm get to see my grandkids and my wife, family, and it's life's good.
And so in reading the book, I thought it was interesting when you talked about how awkward it was that first game that you weren't the coach, when you went out there and people were tailgating and you were out the tailgating and you kind of cracked to your friends like, you guys are out here, drinking beer and drinking wine while I'm in there fighting for my job. What's that experience been like watching football and watching Mizzou and not coaching?
Well, that first year was, the first game, we played West Virginia, not this year ago. That's my first game not being the head football coach at Missouri after 15 years. And I'm sitting out on our patio watching it outside. And it was really odd. And so my wife said, okay, I'm gonna get you your visor. So we got my visor. And she goes, I'm gonna get his headset and I'll cut the wires off. You can wear your headset and the visor around the house. And so we had a bunch of friends over there. Everybody got their little chuckles on that a little bit too. So it's fun to watch. I mean, there's so much pressure in the job. You don't really realize that until you back away from it. And that's probably the biggest thing for me. The pace of life you led, the hours you worked, I loved what I did. I loved it. But when you look back at it, you just kind of shake your head and say, I believe I did that as a head football coach for 25 years, 15 here and 15 and 10 at Toledo. So it's a very, very difficult job. I miss my people ask, I miss my players. I miss just hugging them and kicking their rear end, and then he kicked, and helping them see him mature and grow into young men, and I really, really miss that. I also miss game day, just the game. I miss putting my headset on the sidelines and the referee winding the clock. Let's kick this thing off. Because I went into a zone for the next 4 hours. I love that, so I miss those things. And for me, now I just enjoy watching, games. I always watch it as a coach, though. I can't watch it just to have fun watching it. I'm thinking of down and distance field position, substitutions. I mean, all those kind of things, strategic ideas that are going on in the game. But it's been fun.
Now, I thought one of the more interesting things in the book, especially for Mizzou fans, and I encourage any Missouri football fan or Mizzou fan to buy the book and read it, because I really enjoyed reading about when you took over at Mizzou and you left Toledo. You left a really good team at Toledo, and some people thought you were crazy because you had so much talent returning, and then you're going to come to Missouri, who would and they'd had only two winning seasons in the last 17 when you got there. And mm-hmm. I remember that first press conference. I was at that first press conference when you're introduced as the new coach, and then you came on Sports Radio 810, and you got a lot of questions about, why do you think you can win here? Why did you make this decision? And that was kind of like a cold splash of reality in your face as to what the mindset was at Mizzou when you took over the program, right?
Yeah, it was just a culture, you know. It just and God bless those two teams that, you know, went to bowls there that they had. But two winning seasons, 17 years. And, you know, it involves everybody. It involves everybody at the university. All the people, that, whether you're in academics, food service, strength conditioning, whatever you are, for helping our players, everybody, you know, they're in that losing type atmosphere, and it just took a long time. It took a lot longer to fix that than I thought. It almost took us 4 years to get that to actually flip that. We went losing, winning, losing the first four games. And when Dave Matter, who did a great job of writing this book with me, when Dave, you know, we were talking about, he's very well organized. He's in my house, and we put down all four of those years in front of me. Okay, we're at Missouri now. Here's your first 4 years: losing, losing, winning, losing. So we had the stats of every game, and you know, and everything else. And I just got numb a little bit. You forget what it was like. Now, you know, the next 11 years, we went to 9 bowls. We won 5 of them. We won 4 divisional championships. Games. We had 5 championships. We actually we won. And we were nationally ranked 5 times, twice the top 5. So a lot of great things happened after that, but that was really, really difficult. And I talk about in the book how difficult it was to change the culture. And God bless all those kids that stayed with me. Because a lot of them quit. They didn't want to, you know, do what we wanted to do. And we were I was very pig-headed on, we're going to do this way because this way works. And it worked here at Missouri.
All right, Coach, full disclosure, I was the sideline reporter for the Jayhawk Radio Network back in the days of the epic matchups between Missouri and Kansas at Arrowhead, specifically Armageddon at Arrowhead, which I think was one of the top sports moments in the history of our city. And I, mm-hmm. I saw in your book that you had some really kind words for Mark Mangino. I got to see him when his team was back in town. I can't believe it's a 10-year anniversary of that, by mm-hmm. the way. But one of the things, as a guy from the Kansas side, that always stood out to me from that moment, where those two programs were, how hard it was for you to build up Missouri, how hard it was for Mark Mangino to build up Kansas. But then you also gave me perspective on how hard it is to keep it going, because you mm-hmm. kept it going. Kansas didn't keep it going. It's fallen apart at Kansas since then. Was keeping it together at Missouri and keeping it running once you had it up and running as difficult or more difficult? Or how would you compare that to the process of building the thing up in the first place? Because I've always admired the way you were able to keep consistency after that when Kansas couldn't.
Well, you know, every program's different. You know, I think, it was kind of, to me, it was just the beginning of the 2007, you know, that year, that great, so fortunate we won that game, but one of the great games in, you know, college football history, certainly in our league, and certainly between two, you know, big rivals. But I really felt, you know, the next year, you know, we probably were a better team maybe. And, you know, I didn't do a very good job coaching that year. You know, I should have coached with more of an edge with our players. You know, it's, you know, how can you handle all the success? And for the most part, they did okay. But, you know, as I told the 2017 when they were up here, our opening game this year, we honored them. And I got to talk to their team at a function there. We had about 40% of the players there. And I told them, I said, how significant it was. You know, that was our first divisional championship. We lost to Oklahoma, I think, a championship game where we'd gone to the national championship. But I told those guys, you know, you have to understand that, guys, we won 4 more championships, you know, in the next 7 or 8 years, and you know, 3 more championship games, and you guys started it. You guys said, okay, you can do this in Missouri. You can build a program, you know, a national program at Missouri. And so my hats were off to those guys, because they kind of opened the window that, yeah, you can end up fourth in the nation here at Missouri against all the great people that you got to play. And so, you know, we're fortunate just to keep it going. It's hard to win. It's so hard to win. But I feel very fortunate that I have a lot of good people around me, staff, players. You know, that's one thing my book's about is, you know, I'm very fortunate to have I've always had a lot of people surrounding me that were good people. And I feel very fortunate that I was in that position.
Gary Pinkel's our guest, and Coach, I thought another interesting part of the book was when you talked about recruiting Brad Smith and then getting him on campus. And I remember covering the game, his first game against Illinois in St. Louis, and he just blew everyone's minds. But I remember in the press conference right afterwards, you said, before we build a statue to him, there's still a lot of football that needs to be played. He went on, had a great career. But then in the book, you talk about after the 2004 season. After 2003, you made the first bowl game in a long time in Mizzou, took a step back in 04, and had this conversation in a coffee shop with Mike Alden about the direction of the program, and maybe he was intimating that he was asking you about how you felt and about your coaches. You stood your ground. You didn't want to let go of any of your coaches. You wanted to stick together. But also, it came up that he did not like, and I know this is something you heard from a lot of people about, you cut off Chris Trevino in a post-game interview after a Nebraska loss, and Mike Alden said, hey, look, you can't do that. Everyone likes Chris Trevino. My grandparents like Chris Trevino. And you kind of got the message that Chris Trevino was a very nice, popular guy among the Mizzou fan base. Tell me more about that conversation and what that was like, because that seemed like that was a turning point. And then the next year, obviously, you go to a bowl game and you win the bowl game. But that there were some tough times in 2004.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the big thing is this, is that Mike did, and he had every right to do that. We had losing. I think he believed in our program. I think he could see other people couldn't see. But I think he had to offer it up, is there, you need to make any coaching changes? And he asked me. He didn't imply to do it. But then he certainly had the right to do that. And I said, Mike, a lot of coaches, many, many coaches, fire guys to make it sound like they're making these great changes, okay? And I think a lot of people are throwing, in my business, a lot of people are thrown into the woods, maybe for something that they don't deserve. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I got a great staff. I got good people. And Mike was great about it. Mike said, okay, I just want to make sure, we're on the same page here. And so that was something that certainly, it was something that I wanted to do. It was interesting. When I got there at this time, all the articles that I was told, I didn't read it, but all the articles were about, Gary Pinkel's got this Mid-American Conference staff there, and he's never going to win. He's not going to win. He's had three losing seasons in 4 years. He can't win. And it's interesting that then everything starts changing. We winning. And then all of a sudden they were saying, boy, that was brilliant how he brought that staff in. They've been with him the whole time. And that was just really brilliant what Gary Pinkel did. So, I don't believe in throwing coaches out the door just to make it look like you're making changes. Although I think if there is a time, certainly, hiring the wrong person doesn't destroy your company or business or team. Keeping that person in your business destroys your company and your team. So I'm very, very well aware of that.
And you also wrote about that 2005 season, that there was a big game against Baylor to become bowl eligible, and Brant Smith on a big fourth down play scored a touchdown that helped put the game away. And then we remember that Independence Bowl when your team was down 21-0 early to Steve Spurrier in South Carolina, and the tremendous comeback by the team, and Brant Smith was incredible in that second half. He scored all the touchdowns. And looking back as a Missouri fan and most Missouri football fans, yes, Chase Daniel took everything to the next level and gets all the credit in the world for that, and he should. But without Brant Smith and that performance in South Carolina and laying that foundation, maybe none of that happens. So how important was that, and how important was Brant Smith to the turnaround of the program?
Well, he was mammoth. We needed a playmaker. We needed a catalyst to build on. I mean, you can coach, have the best program in the world. You can be organized. You can do all the things right and develop a leadership, all things you're doing. But, if you don't have guys that are good enough to make plays, it's not going to work. And Brant Smith, on a team, that we had to get a whole lot better as a football team. But to have a guy at that position with a ball in his hands, 75 times a game, that could change a game with his feet, as much of his arm, was hugely important for our success. There's no Brant Smith. There might not be probably any Gary Pinkel here. We wouldn't be having this interview right now. And I think every program's got their story, but, you mentioned that at the Illinois game. Not only that comeback he did against South Carolina, he was a part of that with our whole team, but you flash back, like you mentioned, when after his redshirt year, all the coaches wanted me to play him his freshman year, and we weren't good enough to do that. I thought we'd waste his year. And so we stuck with that. And then freshman year, you know, going against Illinois in St. Louis, and everybody's looking at each other going, who in the heck is this guy? And, you know, it's, you know, the 2003, I think it is, the, you know, the big win against Nebraska in our stadium. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that Brad Smith, along with his teammates, had to overcome. And, you know, Brad's a wonderful kid. He's going to be going into the Missouri Hall of Fame, the State of Missouri Hall of Fame, in a couple weeks. And so, it's well deserved for a great, and everybody knows Brad Smith. He's one of the great people you can ever meet. He's just a wonderful guy.
And Coach, I want to play something for you because, when I was covering Missouri and going to all the press conferences back then, there was, and in the book you talk about, you had a conversation with Don James, your mentor, and he kind of got wind that you were getting frustrated by the media and, uh-huh. and having some issues there. And so I'm gonna see if you remember this comment that you made in a press conference. If you don't, I'll take, 'cause I was sitting right there and I remember exactly the context of this. But this is you after a game during Brad Smith's career. See if you remember what game it was.
Before I say something I don't want to you, I'm not going to say anything. That's my mom taught me that. I was about six.
Any idea what game that was?
No, we lost so many games back then. I don't know which game it was.
That was the game against Oklahoma where he had like 200 rushing yards. He was incredible. And Oklahoma had a fake field goal to win it. And I think it was 27-20. And it was a hell of a performance, a great performance by Brad Smith. But then in the post-game press conference, one of the reporters asked you, and the question was, I'll paraphrase and said, was this the first time that Brad Smith really looked like a freshman to you out there? Because he left the game for a play because he got dinged, came back in and threw an interception, and the look on your face, I said, oh boy, here we go. And you go, are you kidding? You? He just ran for 200 yards and did this and did that. You're asking me if he looked like a freshman, and it looked like you were ready to tackle someone, Coach.
I was about ready to go after the guy, I think. But you know, that's what I, but I quickly went back to what my mom always told me, you know, you don't have to keep your mouth shut. So, you know, it's interesting that I talk about in the book of Coach James, there's a point in that time frame right around there where one of the beat writers, a really young person at the time, you know, just would ask really at the time, not very good questions. And I was, you know, I was obviously high, you know, high stress, high, you know, anxiety, you know, I am, how focused I am. And I fired back at this person, which wasn't, I knew it wasn't very smart. It wasn't a very good thing to do, you know, and then that's when a guy lived in St. Louis who knew Coach James. He calls Coach James up and says, Gary Pickle fired back. I get a call from Coach James. And Coach James Hardy, I bet he called me three times in regards to football stuff like that ever in my whole time, 25 years of being head coach or 23 or so when he was alive. But he said to me, he said, what did I tell you, Gary? So when things go well, he said, you give all the credit. When things are bad, you take all the blame. It's not that complex. And so I said at that point I would never have anybody ever get me to lose my temper in any way. I would never do that. And I never did from that point on. It was a great lesson to learn. I learned it about 3 years too late, probably. I mean, I think I was pretty considerate overall. It's frustrating, and you know, Barry's going through a little bit of that too. You know, you're frustrated, you're angry, you know, there's a lot of emotions going on, and the stress is hard to explain to anybody. Being a head football coach at this level, being the stress that goes on, you know, because there's zero job security, and I think it's. You just have to learn how to manage it, and I think the more you do it, the better you get at it.
So that leads us perfectly into what I wanted to follow up with you on, Coach. You mentioned Barry's going through it right now, and he had a pretty epic rant to the media after the last game. And part of that rant, he talked about the third-string tackle at Rockbridge High School's got 12 Twitter followers, and he's tweeting out about our program, which, you know, I think that was obviously a fictitious character that he's talking about, but the point being that everybody's got an opinion out there, and they can put it out there on social media to criticize the job you're doing. Have you pulled the Don James? Have you given a call to Barry to tell him maybe the advice that you got from Don James?
No, I think he knows that. I think, you know, afterwards, I mean, you know, it's it's you know, to me, that's more attributed just to the stress of the position. I was head coach 10 years at Toledo before I became head coach here. And, you know, and that was the Big 12, and this is even the SEC. So, there's the cell phones, all the social networking, and all the communication that way. It's different than it's ever been. And you have to learn how to manage the stress. And I don't think you can't just wake up one day and I can handle the stress real easy. I think you learn how to handle it. You learn not Barry or me or any head coach, if you kind of know you're at that point where you learn to, just with discipline, and experience, learn how to say the right things at the right time. And so I think that's, he's going to be okay with that. And, it's a very tough job.
One of the things that made me curious, Coach, is that in that rant that Coach Odom gave, he referred to what he's doing at Missouri as a turnaround several times during the course of it. And it made me wonder, gosh, I wonder what Gary Pinkel thinks of this, if you heard that. So what was your reaction to that, hearing what he's got right now being referred to as a turnaround?
Well, I just think he's under a lot of stress, and I think, that's part of it. So he'll get better at handling that, and the job requires that. And you almost have to go through a learning process as you do it. But, hopefully we'll get back on the right track this weekend.
Do you see any parallels in what you were going through? I know it was a little bit later into your tenure in 2004, and you're hearing that from the outside and the pressure to maybe what he's going through right now, because there are higher expectations for him right now because of all the winning that you had?
Yeah, well, probably. I understand that. I mean, we just understand that that's just the way it is. I mean, there's expectations, and there's no security in this business. There's none, and I've always known that. And I never worried about that. I never worried about my job. I didn't. Very rarely did I worry about it. I should say never. That's not right. I very rarely would ever worry about my job. I got good at focusing on doing my job. And that's one thing that I talk about in the book with Coach James, right before I went to get the interview at Toledo, I was leaving Seattle, and I went in his office, to catch a plane and head to Toledo for the press conference. And I went in, shook his hand, thanked him for everything he did for me. I played for him in college. I worked for him for 12 years. And I walked that back out, and I looked back in, and he was standing there, turned around. I said, "Hey, Coach," he looked back at me. I said, "Do you have any words of wisdom?" And he goes, yeah. He goes, "We get everything. Really, 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 those steely eyes. He looked right at me, and he goes, and they're going to get, it's going to get really, really tough. You focus day by day, hour by hour, of doing your job. So you wake up in the morning, and 9 to 10, 10 to 11, you focus on doing your job and not letting anything in." And then I walked out away. I said, "Okay, thanks, Coach," and I left, and I think, well, that was pretty good advice. Well, it was the best advice I'd ever given, because this is really all the conversation we're having right now. You let the stress consume you. I've seen guys get fired; they can't handle it, and so you have to learn how to do that. And you learn with experience, and you learn with developing self discipline, mental toughness, all those kind of things, to be able to control what you did. And that was probably the best advice that I was ever getting for preparation for how intense the job is and the pressure packed situations that you're in.
All right, Coach, before we run out of time, you wrote extensively in your book about what happened during your last season, everything from the cancer diagnosis getting leaked to the media before you were ready to tell your team and your coaches. And you also talked about the boycott and how everything like that went down and how some people were angry with the way you handled it and the situation you were in. You wanted to support your players, and obviously we've seen there's been quite a few issues in football in the NFL with players and speaking out and boycotting. And when you look back at all of that, would you have done anything differently in handling that situation?
Well, I think, first of all, it wasn't about agenda. It was about saving a player's life. So I think it's a little bit different, just so that I think you say there. I talk about in the book, I talk about a procedure as a head football coach that I did for 25 years. And the procedure was, anytime you had something very significant going on within your team, and generally a personnel type issues or problems that would be in the media. And, you know, there's significant ones, and, you know, every coach has them. There's a process to follow, and I talked about the process. And I don't make the final decision on any of those things. I never have. I want to support the players. It was agreed to. You call your AD. The AD calls the chancellor calls the president. You communicate those things about 98% of the time. Any time I did those in the 15 years I was here, or the 25 years head coach, they agreed with what I wanted to do. But at the end of the day, I don't make final decisions on those. So I talk about that in great detail. You know what? You don't get do-overs. Now, no one's ever been through that before. I've recommended there's some things you can do nowadays that I think in August when you have players come in, they sign that they, you know, that the car is their car. They haven't cheated here. There's all these things. NCAA, you have to do that in August prior to football. They do it for all sports. That you put down something like if you choose not to play in a game for your personal reasons, you can lose your scholarship. And then a player signs it. If I had known that, I could tell those guys at the time. Now, you guys remember what you signed last August? So there's something out there that I put out there that would help a leadership person to do that. But you know what? The other thing is people say, boy, I'm so sad that happened to you and everything. You know, life's not like that. You know, you don't go back and say, well, I wish the bad thing didn't happen. It's more or less how you're going to handle it, what are you going to do with it. And you know, you get, you know, that was put on my table. I did what I thought was the right thing to do. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to go back and say, well, should I change it? No, it was the right thing to do. And, you know, fortunately, the university's getting back going well. And but the whole book's like that. I got a DWI. I never had a shot before in my life. But I talked about it. I owned it. And my big deal with that was how my players are going to really look at, see how, you know, Coach Pinkel was going to handle that. And so I go in the whole book. I talk about, you know, being real honest about everything. And I think at the end of the day, that's on my adversities that I had, and most of them, right? Most of my that book's about tremendous successes. It's about all the people around me that helped me be successful, and dealing with in the adversities. Which at the end of the day, if that's how you're going to be judged, we're all going to be judged by how we handle the tough things that happen. And hopefully, you know, people will enjoy it.
Coach, final question for me, and this I got to tell people, if you're a Missouri fan, if you're not a Missouri fan, this book is a tremendous read because of how candid Coach Pinkel is about so many different things that went on. I mean, from the Michael Sam story to conference realignment to what you're talking about here with the boycott. And the one that just left my jaw hanging on the floor when I read it was your feeling about the way the news of your cancer leaked out before you ever had the chance to tell your players or your coaches, and you had to deal with the concerns they had. These guys have to worry about their job security, about the future of their student life as a student athlete, and all these things while you're dealing with cancer. And you come out in the book say strongly that you feel like you know exactly where that leak came from and some of the ramifications it had, not just on the people around you, but on you financially and all that. I definitely encourage people. I mean, I was stunned when I read that. And I just wonder, do you consider legal action on something like that? I mean, how is there something you can do to remedy the way? Because that's outrageous as far as I'm concerned that somebody in your own administration would do that to you.
Well, I know, you know, having cancer and I had resigned prior to that. I told Mac before that. I mean, I think it was like 13 days before that incident happened on that Saturday that I was going to resign, and because of that, and I didn't want to be a distraction. So I didn't want anybody to know about it. That's the most important thing you have to understand. I did not want a distraction. I had to be at the team maybe before the last game or something. I would tell the team that, or after the last game. But I was wanting a distraction, and all of a sudden my secretary walks in and says, this thing's it's out there in the news that you have cancer and you're going to resign. And I said, I'm just going to retire. And I said, there's no way. So I was numb. I mean, I talk about it in the book. I couldn't even believe it. And we're getting ready to board to go to Kansas City. And long story short, you know, it was difficult. And you're right. You know, there possibly could be, but I'm not interested in, you know, I like this university, love this university, and I'm not interested in going back on that. But it's very unfortunate that in someone in leadership roles would leak that out. Our team handled it well. It was win one for the Gipper, and even dancing in the after that game against BYU. But after that, we had two games left. You know, just win one of them, bowl eligible. But I said that Sunday after that game. I didn't. After we beat BYU, our team's focus was like, and you have to be at 99%. Our team focus was like 10. We didn't have a chance because it was, staff, you know, didn't know what was going to happen. You know, they had security in a very insecure, world that we live in, this college coaching, and that's over with now. They didn't, with their wives, their families, their kids, all the players coming to my office saying, "Coach, who's going to get the job and what's going to happen here?" And everything but the football game. And so that was, didn't want it to go down that way. But again, that's the way it happens. That's the way life is. And you deal with it the best you can.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. And I'll tell you this, everything from that first loss to Bowling Green to the wins against Nebraska to the Armageddon at Arrowhead, the SEC championship game in Atlanta, all those great games. I was lucky enough to be there and see those games and watch those games and took my sons to a lot of those games. And I want to thank you on behalf of all Missouri fans for turning Missouri football into a winner and providing great memories for a whole bunch of people in this region, in this area. And thank you so much for writing the book, because it's a great read for Missouri fans. And I look forward to catching up with you when you get to Kansas City to do some book signings.
Thank you. And I'll get those dates to you guys so you can get it out there. I'm very appreciative of that also. And I love Mizzou and had a great run. And let's get a victory this weekend.
Thank you so much, Coach. I look forward to talking again real soon. That is Gary Pinkel, the head coach, forever in my mind, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. That's my coach, Gary Pinkel. The book is The 100-Yard Journey, A Life in Coaching and Battling for the Win, written by Gary Pinkel with Dave Matter. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.